Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
What's up, Sully, dude?
Welcome to Green Screen, man.
Well,
T-Bone's basement.
Well, I mean, this is my basement, so
yeah, nice.
Why are you so welcoming me to my own basement?
Welcome to your basement.
I mean, all right, so...
No, I gotta thank you. This has been a good time.
Yeah, it's good.
You had a nice place.
What are you doing here, by the way?
So, we talk a lot about CE and trying to...
How old are you, by the way?
28.
And how many years out of school?
It'll be 2 years.
Two years.
Yeah.
And what percentage of your colleagues, your age, are taking CE on a regular basis?
25%, maybe less than that.
25%. No good? You guys downing it? What's up?
You think lower? We have like a grandstand. 15%, 10%?
All right. What does that mean?
We're thinking 10% of my colleagues, my 2015 graduate, are taking. I know a couple that are at an implant continuum this weekend, so shout out to them.
Yeah, but just like me, I hang out with people that take lots of ECE and that have a different level of practice than most. So you're probably hanging out with people like yourself. In fact, you're probably hanging out or knowing people that you met at other CE events.
No, I definitely agree. I think we do have a concern. I think we got to realize that like one thing that kills me about our generation is trying to not want to take CE because we're burdened with the debt.
Let's define CE, by the way.
Yeah.
So what is CE in your eyes?
So I'm a big benefit, especially because like me personally, like I have a budget for CE. So I can't just
What is
like,
your budget?
There's not necessarily a number per se.
So then it's not a budget.
Okay, well, let's say like, well, that's...
So why are you lying to us?
Well, no, because I don't believe in like goals either though. So like my budget's probably going to be like somewhere between like 10 to 20 grand a year for CE.
That's it?
Yes.
It's not a lot of money, dude.
And probably a lot of my fellow
that's
colleagues
like one
are
implant
probably
class.
Saying they're like, well, crap, that's a crap ton of CE.
I get it, but what kind of CE are you getting
for that
kind of money?
So that's huge. Like my question is I want to take CE that's going to directly get me a direct return on my investment. So like something that I can say, okay, this, like, I think implants are a good example, or 6 month smiles or Invisalign.
Sure, okay.
So something that I can take back to my practice and immediately implement and get like a direct return.
So I disagree with that to a certain degree. I don't think right now, so I'm looking back to my CE route and I don't think I was really thinking about ROI on a short-term basis. I always think about ROI on a long-term basis. And what I always looked at was, what does it take to build a sustainable practice? Okay, so a sustainable practice to me is a traditional bread and butter general dentistry, something that is fillings, crowns, root canals, extractions, services built around some of those things. And what I wanted to do is learn to master and do those things better. And then I said, okay, now, or even concurrently, I'll continue to add procedures. So one of the things that I'm seeing, and having hired many of your age people, which have all worked out not so well for me.
We want to get to something quickly. We kind of want to skip that.
And that's okay, because listen, when I was at your age, okay, when I was at that point in my career, I had the same things I'm saying to you were said to me. Like, how can you be teaching 4 years out of school? How can you be speaking 4 years out of school? It took me 15 years to get there. Okay. So the timelines can be shortened.
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But what's contained in that timeline doesn't change. So it's okay to shorten the timeline. That's part of technology and that's part of moving forward. But what's not okay is to make the timeline, in my opinion, to make the timeline shorter by putting less things inside of it. So if you don't have a sustainable general practice, then you're going to have a hard time building those additional services in your practice. Now, if you're building a true niche practice that's only going to be focused on one or two things, that's a totally different ballgame. But most people aren't in that situation.
So personally, what and why, I don't necessarily disagree with you at all.
You can disagree with me, by the way.
Well, no, but I don't on this
I know
point.
I'm right.
Well, on this point, you are right. Because yeah. I do think that having that foundational basis is really important. For me personally, it was, I knew that I was going to get a lot of that foundational basis as an associate in the practice that I was going into. So I knew that I was going to get mentored on, you know, really good fill. How to do really good.
How do you
fillings.
Know you're getting mentored on that?
Well, because.
Have you ever gone to a CE class and seen high level fillings to compare it to what you've learned?
Well, what I learned in dental school versus what
oh,
I
shit.
See in there. Okay. Maybe
Come
not.
On.
But I knew that, like, what.
So, I want you to finish the
sure.
thought. Okay. I want you to finish
well,
the thought.
Well, my thought's a good thought.
But when your bar is.
You don't know any different.
You don't know any
yeah,
different.
Yeah, but you don't know that. You can't punish me for that, though.
No, I can't. But what I can say is that your eyes should be open to seeing what's really possible. That's how you strive. That's how we reached the moon. That's how we did. That's
right.
how we built an airplane. That's how
My
we built a car.
My point is that at some point, depending on where you're going into as a, you know, whether you're going into corporate associate or whatever, you're going to have some sort of level of education built into what you're doing, who you're with. Now, if you go into a startup by yourself or you buy out of practice completely, then yeah, like probably the first CE course you should go take is like how to talk to patients or like how to treatment plan. Now, some of that, like I feel... For me personally, I knew that I was going to be able to get that because I had was going into an associateship with someone who's been doing it for 30 years.
So
that, like, I was going to be able to learn
just,
from them.
So just because they've been, I know it's your dad, so I'm not trying to say anything, okay? But just because your dad's been doing it wrong for 30 years means it's okay?
and you're going to learn that, right? Like that's
No, you're not. You'll never learn that if you're never exposed to what's right.
But you're going to get exposed to other CEs at some point. Like it's not just always wrong.
No, but the CEs I'm seeing people do are clinical CEs, not communication, not treatment planning.
Sure, yeah.
They're not business oriented. Most people are focused so much on the clinical CEs that they're never spending any time on the things that allow them to.
But I can make the same argument for your own colleagues that they're not sure. that they're only doing clinical CEs and not doing
sure.
things to expand their team or whatever.
Right.
I think all around we need to be better about that.
That's an age old argument, but what I would say to that is. My colleagues have already paid their dues and are making money and have...
Well, thanks to the YouTube, we don't have to pay our dues. We can just watch it.
Right, and that's true. Listen, it's a never-ending perspective. What I would say is I'd like to see people take more communication skills. I think what's allowed me to do the bigger cases is not the clinical education. Sure, that plays a role, but it's the education and leadership and how to talk to patients and how to create simplified treatment plans that
sure.
make it easy for patients to say yes.
Well, and I mean, personally, like, I came here for sleep, right?
Right.
But like, ultimately, what I'm taking home is not necessarily all sleep oriented, mm-hmm. more of like practice oriented. Like, okay, well, this does apply to sleep, but like, man, we need to adjust how we're doing
but
this.
Be more specific with us. What do you mean by that?
What specifically
did we do today?
Sure. How do we approach patients? How do we approach the way we convey the need for dentistry? Why we need to do this? The
so
value
your
in something.
Your mentorship of 30 years didn't provide that for you.
It does, but it doesn't. It only gives it in one perspective, right?
Like, so the whole point of going to CE classes is outside of what you've learned.
Well, yeah, I see that there. It's important to see different perspectives because yeah. the way and the same reason that why you don't do everything, it's important for you to take CE, right?
Right, and we do, but sometimes we can make a decision. See, to me, it's okay if you take the CE and make the decision that it's not right for you.
Sure.
Okay. What's not okay to me is to never take the CE or never be exposed
no,
to what's possible.
Well, and that's what ticks me off is we have a group, a large group, and I don't think it's one generation or the other. I think it's overall is that we see we're not going to take the CE because we see like what it's going to cost. It's going to be $7,000 to go take the CE when we're not thinking about the bigger picture, right? Like,
sure.
what does this bring to my practice? How does this increase my whatever? And it's like, that's such a small nugget to the true value of yeah. what we're doing.
So back to the specific things that you learned today. Talk to me about that.
You know, I think creating value is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't mind saying sell dentistry. I think that ultimately what we're trying to do is create a value to the patients. And so I think sleep's one of those big ones, right? We don't understand, when we first get into kind of dealing with sleep or bruxism or all that stuff, we're kind of like, it's unknown and we're kind of trying to just skirt around the bush. And when we start to see the actual true what's going on and we see the impact that has on people's lives personally and more than just like the dental, we start seeing them as people, we're able to kind of treat that better. And so that's something that I think that I can take back that's more real life impact, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, and that's fair.
You know, I think that's good. One of the best things, and we've joked about this, about how there's a lot of good online CE. But I think what we miss when we take online CE versus like in-person CE is how other people do things. I love just walking around your office today with you and chit-chatting about like the subtle nuances of how, you know, you bring patients back or deal with this or do morning huddles, because ultimately we all do things differently.
Well, that fit our personality.
Sure. And there's some aspects of that are really good, but then there's other aspects that we do that aren't, you know, there's probably things that like you could do better. Oh, there's things that I could do better, right?
And so almost everything I can do better.
Like today, like we were talking about morning huddles. It was like something not, and I realized that like I had been doing all the work for the morning huddle. Like I was like, okay, well, I got to figure out what the heck we're going to talk about for 15 minutes to make this work. And you're like, dude, I show up and like every single team member has gone through their column and knows exactly what they're doing. And they're telling me what's going on. I'm like, why am I wasting my time?
Right.
Like what a no brainer.
They're not engaged. So it's a regurgitation fest.
Exactly.
Nobody's listening.
And then, yeah, it's like we show up early. Like, well, at least we got staff there on time. Yeah.
That's at least we're going to start. Well, you know, there's not staff, it's team. Well, but yeah. Staff is an infection.
I know.
All right, what else did you like of the private office tour I took you on that I told Aaron was going to be 10 minutes and it turned out to be an hour?
Personal branding.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Taking marketing strategies and then putting them on your logos, making them personal to your office.
So instead of doing the quote-unquote the opalescence whitening flyers.
We get a lot of free flyers too and throwing them up on the,
So
making it personalized.
So we have my name on it, my logo on it.
Subliminal blending is what kind of you put it
in. And then I subliminal marketing. Yeah. What else did you take? Anything else? That's all. Because you could have done that by, walked you around with that.
And it's, I think it's interesting too, because like people who listen, it's another reason I love coming. I'm glad I came here, right? Because like I hear you speak and I hear you talk and like you have this image of what does T-Bone's practice look like?
Like an asshole I am.
Yeah. Right? Like this guy's a total dick. So
That's
like, what does his practice look like in real life? And I think what's cool to me is to see where you've invested in, but then where like, you know what? It is what it is. Like, so when you walk through your practice, it's very nice. Mm-hmm. You've designated certain areas, but at the same time, when I walk into your operatory, it doesn't look like ADEX $70,000 operatory, right?
I don't get suckered into that stuff.
Exactly. And so I think that like, ultimately, there's value in a lot of things we do where it's worth spending money. Mm-hmm. And I see that where it's great. You know what? Your waiting room is really, really nice.
But it's not expensive.
No. Yeah. But it's nice. You can tell that you've spent extra time or somebody.
Yeah, some of my wife.
Your wife has spent extra time investing into that area versus where your operatory is, where things, you know, you've got TVs looking where the patients can see them, you know, which is, but at the end of the day, like the patient doesn't, they don't give a crap what the chair they're in is.
How I have nice chairs.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying like, I think a lot of times we get sucked into the value of like what we vision has to be this like beautiful.
But that's the vision of the dental supply people.
Right. But that's a good point though. Is like as 2 years out, I didn't know what the difference between ordering from Patterson, Benco,
Darby,
Shine versus ordering from Ivoclar. I didn't know that like you couldn't order directly from them. Like I didn't understand that there were supply warehouses versus companies. Like you don't get taught that in dental school. So like when you come out and like this really good salesman walks in, you're kind of a sucker, right? So like you don't know.
Yeah,
so,
you
like,
got a lot of money from the bank, man.
You're ready to spend it. So I think there's, and again, that's where personal CE going and being face to face is really good. Can we get some questions?
Nobody's watching, dude.
That's fine.
So in all seriousness. Hey, So we spent some time with one of my hygienists, Angela, today.
Yes.
How was that? What did you think of that? What did you glean from that?
You know,
nothing, it seems like.
No, I'm thinking personally like what my hygienist, you know, the problem is like I see, I'm a little jealous because I see your hygienist doing a lot of things that I'd love to do. Like I'd love to be able to walk in and then have taken like a bunch of pictures with a DSLR camera.
So why don't you make that happen?
Because I feel like I try to, and
so you failed once, you're not gonna try again?
Maybe.
You asked your wife out once or twice or three times before she said yes?
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But that's a reality, though. Like, we are
so you're not
failing a lot of times.
But you're not, that means what I hear is you're not committed to making it. It's not that important to you. Or it's not that important.
Probably.
Oh,
yeah, and I inherited the team. Like, that's, And that's a big thing that we talk about. It's like,
okay, I'm going to say, but I got the thoughts.
Well, right, like your whole point is like to disrupt that. So, but it is a reality that a lot of dentists my age inherited.
You can't go revolutionizing thing. It has to be an evolution, not a revolution.
And this idea that we just fire everybody and start over is not reality.
But don't we all have inherited teams? Because unless you hire them straight out of school.
I don't know. How many of your team is original?
What do you mean by that?
There when you got there.
None. I mean, I started my practice from scratch.
So you didn't hire team members and none of them stayed there?
No, what I'm saying is I have inherited teams too, because unless you get them straight out of school, they're...
You're saying from the practice they've come to.
They could have come from your practice.
But I mean more so like, so, and we joked about this earlier, but you know, Dad had done so many things really good. Yeah. But like we joke about like, you know, one of the things he had kind of taken pride in was that like he didn't have a lot of staff turnover.
Yeah. Team turnover.
You don't have a lot of team turnover when...
You know what a staff is?
It's an...
Besides an infection, a staff are people that serve you.
Well, that wasn't the case. It was definitely a team.
Okay, but no, in all seriousness, I've always learned or believed that a staff are people that are there to cater to you and serve you and are there because they just got to be there. And I think a team is a group. And I think there's a morale booster in referring to them. I know many people look at it as cheesy, but I think my team takes pride in us referring to them as a team. And I'm a member of their team too. I'm trying to
change it over.
I know, but it's one. So you're only 2 years out of school. I mean, it should be an easy mindset to change.
My point being is that like for him, the team hadn't changed because the team was kind of running him.
Sure.
So there wasn't a lot of like, he was content, he was happy, but the team wasn't, they weren't necessarily doing things. He wasn't like implementing things or asking them to do things that would require them to have turnover because you weren't happy with what they were doing. Does that make sense?
It does.
So now you come in and
he's complacent.
Like, sure. You get content.
I'm content.
And that's a huge issue. That's a huge battle. Yeah. Because most dentists 45 and over that are successful are content.
I would say 36 and over, 37 and over.
36 and over, 37, yeah.
I think part of that is they're not passionate about what they do.
And it's easy to fall into that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I would say for the vast majority, dentistry is not their love. Their family is their love. Their life is the love. Whatever it is, dentistry is just a means to creating the economics they need to be able to do what they want.
Sure.
And you can't fault them for that to a certain degree. But
so my point is that I come in, mm-hmm. new energy, excited, new ideas, and have to try to implement this stuff. So like, let's talk about the camera stuff.
Okay.
I want to come in and implement this where like I want them taking digital pictures, not just intraoral cameras.
Did you see any intraoral cameras in my office?
No. Just
How many digital cameras did you see?
You had a digital camera in every op.
In every operatory.
That's impressive.
Because I'm willing to spend $1,000 in every operatory? That makes it impressive?
To us, yeah.
But that's what it is.
And so what happens then is I come in there and try to implement that, but I have two team members who... doing it this long, who don't want to now, like, whether they try or don't, it's a learning curve. Like, you know, that I only got this much time with the patient, yet they end 30 minutes early every time. You know, like it's a constant battle, and so like you get beat down. That's reality. Like, it's not that I don't want to try things, but we can all sit here and say like, yeah, we've tried to.
So how do I not get beat down? What's wrong with me?
Well, I'm sure you're doing certain things.
Sure.
Associates beat you down.
No, they don't beat me down. Okay. I beat myself down.
Okay.
You know, but I choose wrong.
My point is like, I don't know. How do you do that? That's a good question. Because a lot of people out there, dentists at 28 and dentists at 56, who try to implement things, struggle with the fact that the team doesn't want to do it the first time. How do you get over that barrier?
I mean, I have non-negotiables. Photos are non-negotiable. I won't come in and do your check until it's up.
And maybe that's what we need to do. Okay. You know, one thing...
I would have a talk with your father first to back you up on this.
Sure. Well, I think that's what anybody who's in either a partnership,
whether it's mom, dad, or whatever it is.
Yeah, or associateship, it's a partnership, whatever it needs to be, there needs to be support.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing we touched on today is how do we create an environment that everybody succeeds?
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about bonuses.
And
I think that's...
Which is an unbelievably hard thing, right?
Super hard.
Yeah. Nobody, to this day, says they have a perfect formula. Except somebody that's trying to sell you something.
But what I do think is that it's important to step back and realize that, like, if we're all, and you kind of talked about this, as the team leader, your happiness is important.
It's the most important.
Right. And I don't necessarily disagree with you on that, but like, as the ship rises, everybody is the benefit, or it's going to be chaotic. And so like you've set it up in a way where,
but
like,
you do disagree with me in a certain way. I see it in your voice and eyes.
What part?
About that my happiness matters first and most.
Yeah, that's, I think ultimately our practices are bigger than that.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
I disagree. Who's the leader in your practice?
I think you are, but I think ultimately the way we do dentistry, your agenda shouldn't affect the way that we treat patients or put patients kind of priority.
But I do want to make, it's a priority to me to make my patients priority.
Well, and if that aligns, then yeah.
It's a priority to me for my team to succeed and do well and grow every year. It's a priority for me to, for them to create a life that they want.
I think my only problem with that was that there's multiple ways to run a practice. And okay. The way you run the practice isn't necessarily the only way.
Mine's just less worse than most.
Well, we'll give you that.
Right. It is, right? But what I mean is I'm not saying being self-centered.
Sure.
Okay, I'm just saying that...
It comes across like that, though, to some people.
No, you hear it as that. It doesn't come across that way to me.
I'm just telling you, that's how it comes across.
That's what you assume it means.
That's what you assume it sounds like.
Well, I don't care what it sounds like, to be honest with you. I know what it means.
Yeah, but what it comes across to... Perception is reality.
You're right. Perception is reality. Absolutely right there. So let me clarify what I mean by that. Is that as a business owner, okay, as the 100% business owner, my priorities are first. Okay, so my vision matters, okay? Because when I'm not happy in the practice, everybody isn't happy in the practice. When I'm not doing when I'm not in a happy environment, I'm not doing my best for my patients. When I'm not in a happy environment, I'm not able to give my team or support my team or lead my team to achieve their greatness or whatever it is they want to do. Okay, for them to see a different role for themselves, right? So I've got to be self-focused on my goals first, because when I achieve success, I can then bring others success. But if I don't achieve success myself, I'll never be able to give it to those around me.
Assuming your agenda doesn't become your agenda versus like, well, then the practice agenda.
But those people shouldn't stay.
Sure.
I mean, if your ship is moving in a direction that you don't like.
Yeah, then the team.
So who's the onus on? The team member or me? Because I'm going to go in my direction one way or the other. Correct?
Sure. That's very clear.
No, but or as you should.
Yeah.
You should move in your direction.
You're confident.
No, I'm not talking about a relationship as a partnership, like a marriage and things that. That's a different level of compromise. Okay, but when you're
a business,
when you're a 100% owner, you move in the direction you want to move in. And now when you get pushback, okay, if people start dropping like flies, then you have to alter that, right? Okay, right, absolutely. Okay, I'm not saying that, okay? But I'm saying I'm picking the agenda of where my ship's going to go. And if it's not the right fit for those around me, and I really believe morally and ethically it's the right way to go, then I'm going to continue to move in that direction. I've made the mistake of trying to cater to the one or two people or the one person that's different. And today I really want to cater to myself, and not in a self-centered way, but I know that I truly want to make a difference for everyone that's committed to me. And so I'm going to move in my direction.
So I'll kind of wrap up with this. The other thing.
We're almost done or something?
Well, no.
We have a question.
Oh, wow. From who?
From Michael Arias. Off office manager is with me and wants to know what you do to make morning huddles exciting and effective.
Well, shoot.
He just gets up and talks.
Apparently they.
Well, you talk to my team. So let's clarify a couple of things. When we went on a tour today of my office, when I took you around, it wasn't me doing all the talking, was it?
No, he basically walked into an op and was like, "Hey, Liz,
or who? Angela, yeah." I walk out and I say, "Talk to them and talk to them," right? And so it was really not me saying what I think we're doing, but what I wanted you to experience. It was purposeful by what I did. I wanted you to see what's really happening in our practice. So talk to us. What did Joe talk to you about today about what our morning huddles are like?
Well, they're informative because they don't, and that's where I think my morning huddles, like most dentist morning huddles, struggle is that because they become monotonous kind of deals where the dentist is trying to force this kind of interaction. Well, what Joe, who, correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of like your office manager.
She's director of, her self-title is director of operations.
DO, director of operations.
She made that title up, by the way. Okay, I've never heard of such a thing. Okay,
is that?
I know Joe's on, but that's fine. I make fun of her. She's sussing it out. Okay.
Love your accent, Joe. By the way. Is that basically? You know, every day before the previous day, it's the job of whoever's column it is, whether it's your hygienist or assistant, whatever you're blocked out for that day, to go through and kind of analyze that day and see where, okay, is there something that's going to be weird about this? Do we need to get something for this? Is there going to be unique about this? And so that when we come together as a morning huddle, we can communicate to, hey, by the way, we need to make sure that she's been eligibility checked for this pan, or we're going to need to do this because we don't have that. And so really for him, it's like, you don't do much talking at all.
No, I will do more of a leadership type of thing. Like the other day, for example, I came in out of the blue and said, listen, I feel like I'm falling behind on this video thing, this internet thing, basically, right? That we're not taking enough videos and producing testimonials. So I walked in and said, listen, it's really important to me. And I started it that way. It's really important to me. So you can call it selfish, self-centered, whatever it is.
What you do is you put... what you're really good at, you're really good at giving autonomy and ownership to your team members.
Yeah, but in a way, yes, absolutely. But I say what's important to me.
So that they understand the value.
No, they understand that
this is a non-negotiable, in a way, nicely, right. Yeah,
so what's important to me is that we do videos and testimonials, okay? So I don't start, or I'll interrupt some days, because some days my mind is somewhere else. I'm just being honest, okay? And in the middle of everybody talking, I'm like, hey, listen, I need a second. And I'll go through and I said, listen, I feel like I'm falling behind on video testimonials. Listen, if we can get 10 this month, I'll take everybody out for a pedicure. Are you guys in for that? Or am I giving you too high of a number? They said, we're going to schedule it for 2 weeks from now. I said, great. You guys know the schedule. Just tell me where it is and we'll make it happen.
And that's like, that to me is like, every dentist should take that back. Like, make that happen. Like that's
but they chose it, right? I said, this is what I want. I'm thinking this number. Do you guys think that's possible?
And that's like everybody in this, would you, you know, give away $100 to take home $1,000.
Of course, in a heartbeat.
All day long.
Like, it's going to cost me $350 to go get pedicures, and I'm going to have 10 video testimonials on my website.
Do you get the pedicure too?
Absolutely. I go with them. I like getting pedicures.
I've never gotten the pedicure. I can tell. Like a non-negotiable.
I can tell through your sandals that like that looks pretty nasty.
To me that's like a non-negotiable. Like I'm not sure I'm ready to put my feet on that. I think that's good. I think that's so important. And for me, that's a big thing that I take home. It's like, man, how can I implement things and get the team excited about that? And like, that's a quick short-term way to do that.
I'm a little disappointed in something.
What?
Because I'm thinking about totally something else and not listening to you. Okay. So,
my flow?
No, I'm disappointed in something that Angela, my hygienist, was talking about with you that you didn't mention as a aha thing.
Okay.
What did she mention to you that she did her first couple of months in practice with me?
She came back to your office basically every day.
Every day.
We had a debrief.
Of what happened today that didn't go well. And I told her when I hired her, because I'm a passive, as much as whatever.
I had a staff member come in and be like, hey, today's my 90 days. And I was like, so?
Yeah.
They're like 90 day review. I was like,
But 90 days are uncomfortable when you do it once, right?
That's my point though. It's like, I've let this whole period go by and there's been absolutely no sort of conversation of like improvement. You know, just
and now you're going to try to lay it all on at one time,
like,
right?
Like, yeah, like that's what we suck at.
And you don't remember. And what happens is you forget, you remember the bads and forget the goods that happened yesterday. 100%. And the people think that all you focus on is the bads, correct?
100%. Yeah.
You know, so and I tell people now, and I've learned this the hard way, unfortunately.
Because I think that's what's one problem with morning huddles is they become like a, a dentist telling everybody what they're pissed off about.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't
be. Morning huddle is 10 minutes of each person telling something that involves that the whole team needs to know.
And I'm telling you why the majority of dentists don't like them or don't do them is because we are doing those things.
Yeah. They're not, the team's not involved in taking ownership in it.
I agree.
And I don't. I can't imagine that I'm totally unique that I can cultivate people that want to take ownership.
No, I don't disagree.
Okay. What else did you learn today?
What was my point that I was wanting to talk about?
I have no idea. I wasn't listening. It wasn't important to me, so
no,
I went somewhere else.
It wasn't really
else.
Important.
You know, they said never to have dead time on TV.
I know.
It's really bad for you. What do you expect coming this weekend? What do you expect my practice to be like?
Well, that's tough because, you know, you. I think it kind of met expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, I expected it to be, you know, you talk a lot about being a bread and butter PPO, mm-hmm. your normal dentist day-to-day business practice, that you're nothing special, mm-hmm. you know, that you practice like most middle America dentists. And
sure.
And as far as like the building you work in, mm-hmm. the location, the patients you deal with, and
I would say my location is probably better than 90% of practices out there.
But I wouldn't disagree with, like, but that was, it was good to see that, like, yeah, like, you're not some, you know, superhero. You're I don't want to say names.
No,
but you're not somebody that practices like some like insane, crazy. Like you're not doing anything different than I think the majority of dentists are trying to do.
Or could do.
Bingo. Yeah, that's a great point. I think that like ultimately the things.
It's not like I got lucky with my location.
No, I think the things that are making you successful are things that all of us could be successful.
Did you see anything in my office that was outstanding in the sense that it was, wow, that's the one thing. There's nothing that's the one thing, is there?
No.
Yeah. That's what I love. It's nothing that's the one thing.
It's not like you walk in like a you know, some five-star hotel that's just like catering. I mean, no, it's very nice. There's mm-hmm. there's nice things, but like, yeah, like I think you said, it's there's nothing flashy.
What'd you expect of my training center?
That was impressive.
Yeah. Why? Probably because you don't go to enough CE.
Well, I could be there. We're nice, good CE.
Yeah. Well, no. The quality of CE is not necessarily reflective of the facility, but...
You've done a great job. I mean, you did phenomenal. You've obviously brought a incredible talent.
Dr. You only Elliot. Have to say that because she's here.
I know.
Otherwise, you wouldn't say that.
But she's way sweeter than you.
So and I think she beat you in billiards of pool today. Yeah. I just wanted people to know that. You let her win. Oh, God. Do you hear that, Aaron? He let you win. He let you win. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, I think what you're doing is very unique because there's no one else is creating that awareness that you are.
Well, I think what we're doing is unique in the sense that we bring team members up to talk to you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think what it is empowering to other team members because it's easy for me to tell you what to do, and I think people hear it with certain level of grain of salt. But when they hear Liz talk about it, or they hear Angela talk about it, or you hear Joe talk about it.
It gives it a reality kind of check that it's not just like a lecture.
It's not a pie in the sky either.
You know, it's very attainable.
Yeah.
So I think that's unique. I mean, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's killing me that I can't remember what I was going to talk about.
What else you got for me? How's your podcast doing?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
coming along.
Yeah.
Super pleased. You know, you never know what a podcast is going
to
do.
So here's what I would say to you about your podcast, okay? I would say, A, I haven't listened to a lot, okay? But what I would say, no, but it's not that. What I would say to other people out there, okay? And so this is not going to apply to 80% of the dentists out there. But there's 20% of the dentists that are motivated and eager and want to brand themselves. And what I would say is that in 2 years, you go places and you meet people that have heard your podcast, correct?
Sure.
So in a way, they've met you without meeting you. And that reminds me very much of what we were doing back in 2000, 2001 on Dental Town. Our medium then was an online forum, and today's medium is podcasting and online social media. Not forums, but through Facebook. What do you guys do? Instagram?
Instagram.
Okay.
You need to get with Instagram.
Sure. If it's automated on Meet Edgar, I can do Instagram.
It'll be worth your while.
I'm not really interested. I don't know why it would be worth my while. But
I know what you worth your while.
Maybe. I just can't imagine.
Does 3D Dentists have an Instagram?
I don't think so.
We got to talk to Lori.
Yeah. No, she wouldn't know. I mean, she's like 80.
Okay.
You know, she wouldn't know. She's not 80, but I mean, she's a wonderful person, yeah. but she's not social media savvy in that sense.
Well, you need to be.
Yeah. No, okay. But we have a good Facebook presence.
Facebook's is what I'm being told is Facebook's is yesterday.
To people like you.
Well, we are the next, we're your buyers.
Actually, you are not my buyers today.
Buyers.
So should I,
your buyers.
So should I focus on my buyers of today or should I focus on my buyers of 4 years from now?
I think that's, you focus on today's dentistry or you focus on tomorrow's dentistry?
You have 75% of your eye focused on today's dentistry and 25% of your eye focused on the future dentistry.
Okay. As long as we're thinking about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about you guys. You guys will eventually come around.
What needs to be understood, and this is what gets me fired up a little bit, is like the reality is we are going to take over the industry, whether you like it or not.
No, it's not that I don't like it. It is exactly because my generation did 20 years, 15 years ago.
Culture is going to get caught up with the idea of technology. And I don't know any different. Like what to me, a CRIC is a video game.
No, it is.
To me, a 3D printer,
it's Photoshop.
Like, that's what I do.
Yeah.
So like,
it's a dot matrix to you.
That's what we're going to do. Yeah. And like, it's going to be no different. And so like, this idea that like our generation is going to somehow like, is like annoying. And I'm like, that's fine. Think that way because watch out because
you'll be the new normal.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I can't remember what day it was. It's the day I got on and started asking all the millennials to come on my podcast. Yeah. It dawned on me that what I'm seeing is exactly what I made fun of 15 years ago.
It's no different than every generational change or transition, I think.
It's no different. You're right.
I think it's just that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like it's new, it's different, but it's reality.
So 15 years ago or 16 years ago, I was the young whippersnapper like you guys, and I had the 45, 50-year-olds. I mean, I'm only 41. But I had the 45 or 50-year-olds telling us that we didn't know what we were doing, we're going to be the downfall of dentistry, and now we're leading our profession to a certain degree, right? And so I don't want to come this across the wrong way. I don't want to lose to you guys.
Well, because frankly, the reality is, you know how hungry you were back then? How when you and Sam and them were trying to like get it?
Yeah.
That's how we are. And like, we don't have the family, the time, the all this stuff. So like...
But you're burdened with school debt.
Yeah, but you know what? That's going to affect a lot of people. But there's a lot of us that are going to think just like you and are going to think bigger than that. And so like, I'm going to think that, you know what? I will take $300,000 in debt to make $1 million all day long.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like, we're the ones that are going to, and that's why it gets me excited about when I talk to colleagues who go and take these courses and get motivated and do and implement this new stuff is like, there's a lot of us out there.
No. And the other,
and that's what's going to happen.
The other thing that I would say, and the reason, and on our millennial podcast, I talk about this on my millennial podcast, you know, my series I'm doing, is that your dentistry of your generation is far more advanced than my generation, okay? And what I mean by that is it took me 10 years to get in the implant game. It took me 15 years to get in the sleep game.
You don't have that cost of time.
It took me 5 years to get in the endo game. It took me 7 years to get in the ortho game.
And I think that pisses off a lot of your generation or people that are...
They pissed off the generation before me of what I was doing, right?
Why can I do what you can do in half the time?
And what I'm seeing from the millennial generation that is good and bad, okay, but needs to be recognized by our generation is that when my generation replaced somebody, we overtook old people's practices. Okay,
that's like okay. The world.
Right. No, but see, I'm not going to allow you guys to overtake my practice. I'm not going to be a casualty of war because I didn't keep up. And what I'm seeing is every millennial I've talked to, the 10 or 12 I've talked to, are all 2 or 3 years in, learning to do implants, learning to do sleep, learning to do this, learning to do this, all these things that took me 10 to 15 years to get to, and they're doing it in 2 to 3 years, but the time has shrunk, correct?
Correct.
So what I want to emphasize to my 40 to 50 year old generation is get your game ready, okay? Because the new guys are coming.
Well, and that to me is what I've been trying to kind of like say.
Because yeah, but you guys are busy in your basements and mommy's basement.
But you know what? Whose fault is that?
Not me.
Are you really going to fault us for taking advantage of that? Or are you going to fault mom and dad for not kicking us out? Like, you act like that's a bad thing. That's like, oh, I want to take the free place to stay, but I'm going to like, I mean, think about it. Like, some of the raps we get are like, it's a joke.
I mean, yeah, but they're deserved.
Well, that may be the case. But at the same time, it's not going to escort the majority, not necessarily you. But that's a reality.
No, it is. So what
I think why, and again, we talked about it a lot of times, but like why I think it's so important that the more communication we can have, the better it is for both. Because what we need to understand is that we don't freaking know it all, you know, and that we have so much to gain by listening to the wisdom of people who have been there and done it before. Because you have done it.
Like, it's no different than how we viewed our parents in a way.
Well, right.
And I'm your parents' age.
You know,
to a certain degree, right?
But the point is like, if I can learn what you did 15, 20 years ago and try to fix and not do the mistakes you've made,
of course,
feel like that is so much value.
Dude, that's 5 years of my life I could have back.
Right? Exactly. So why? That's 5 years.
What that 5 years means?
A lot of money and a lot of time.
But in the scheme of things, that's almost a doubling period. That means my money is worth double, or you know, half of a double. At the end of my life, not at the beginning of my life.
It's big, yeah.
It's a huge number.
And we need to get that.
Are your colleagues saving?
We do. That's a not like they should.
I would say
That's like a big. That's a big passion of mine.
I would say So I've had people ask me how I've developed some of the things I've done, and my development process became significantly easier when I started saving money regularly.
So let me focus in on this, because this is something that I'm very, very, very...
Are you going to try to decide and have them sign up for your 401k plan or something?
What pisses me off is the time value of money is very important. And this goes back so much to simple to just compounding interest, how money grows over time. And I don't think we get that a lot of times. So what pisses me off is we start to look at like, it's all about debt and we let debt control our life. And versus like, and this goes back to something as simple as CE, something as simple as buying a practice, something as buying whatever, right? We let the fear or the idea that we can't pay something become what controls how we do something. So with finance and saving for retirement and trying to save for the future, it's the same thing. Because what people always want to do is you want to compare interest rates. And like that pisses me off more than anything. And there's probably people in this group out here, and you may disagree. What we want to do is we say, okay, if my interest loans are at 7% interest rate, okay, and I am going to say like we can't get more than that in the stock market, why would I not pay off the guaranteed interest rate? Does that make sense?
No, because I think you should always keep debt and save, because at the end of the day, if you go personally bankrupt, who cares?
My personal thought is a dentist needs to be really comfortable with $1 million in debt. Like, they need to set a million, number that's like or 2 million or whatever it is. Yeah. They need to be realized that like this is a lifetime of debt. Mm. Hey, pull in here. How much debt do you have? Come on, give it on.
A lot more than a million.
Just give it out.
We all went to a private dentist.
Give me the, I'm trying to get numbers here. No one's saying your names. Just give me numbers. All your debt.
3.5 million.
Easy. Over 3 million. Over 3 million.
I don't know.
You've been killing it lately with three dentists. The point is that like that's three dentists before you're over $3 million in debt. And you know how many of those three were not like those three are could not be more happy and confident and killing. They're probably worried, but like
you guys like, are freaking out about 300.
I aspire to be like the three of them. And we're complaining about
$3 so let's talk debt. About debt for a second. This is only 42 minutes, dude.
All right, good. Okay.
So there's different types of debt. There is the traditional, I call it the American debt, which is credit card debt And he
debt
says,
that we don't even like
a debt that you have
and I don't even like try to like think about.
No, but it's not even that, but it's a debt you can't put any, you can't, there's no tangible, there's nothing. It's like the shit's in the air.
You buy a Home Depot refrigerator and like it goes on debt.
So when I talk about debt, I'm not ever saying that you should be in debt for those things. To me, debt is about something that produces income.
Well, this is important because you've gotten kind of taken a bad rap for this a little bit because you like to hate on our debt. But I think
I don't hate on your debt. I just try to make the reality of your debt.
And I think it's okay, but I think
it's the least amount of debt you'll ever have in your life.
And what you haven't done well is articulate that well enough.
It's hard to do on a typewriter forum.
That's why I'm giving you the
I can't I can't articulate it from an iPhone.
Well, articulate. You know?
So, I think this concept that you're burdened with 300 grand or 400 grand in debt is total BS, okay? And what I mean by that is, and if you are business-minded, okay, if you went into dentistry because you want to have a good job that makes $150,000 to $200,000, $250,000 a year, then 300 grand of debt is a boatload of debt, okay? But if you're in dentistry because you want to make an impact, you want to own your own practice, you want to possibly own multiple practices, you want to possibly have multiple providers, you want to have all the latest technology, and you want to make a living, a career out of what you do, you want to be a professional, then I think 300 grand of debt is nothing. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's a drop in the bucket. Because at some point, you're going to buy or build a practice.
Let me jump in and play devil's advocate, because what everybody's saying is right there, saying, But our interest rates are 7-8%.
Great. When my parents moved to this country, our interest rate was 18%, and they took on debt.
Well, but the millennials aren't going to worry about that because that's not what our reality is. So our reality is it's 8%. So like that's a lot to us.
What's your alternative? Is 5%? 6%?
But this is huge because I think ultimately the crux of this major problem and then why it pisses
me off. What do you think that interest rate should be? What would that be in the open free market today? 4.5%?
Sure.
Okay, so you're bitching
about you can refinance it to that.
Okay, so then what the hell are you bitching about?
I would like to know. Yeah, you can refinance down to 5-6%.
Okay, so that's outrageously high. What do you want it to be?
I can make an argument that as
what's your practice loan debt at, percentage wise?
4%.
4%. So let's make student debt 4%. Let's just make it that. All right,
but that's probably a little better than they can get.
Okay, but let's pretend. But it's a burden. So let's make it not a burden. Okay, let's make it 4%. Okay, so that's what you're saying is a point and a half lower than what you think you can refinance it to.
What, a couple $100 a month?
Exactly. So what you're saying to me is that you're bitching and moaning. You're not you personally, but your generation. I don't like to look at it that way. You're bitching and moaning to me about what amounts to a couple of $100 a month. So you're letting a couple of $100 a month dictate your mentality of how you move your life forward. Notice what I said there, how you move your life forward. And not just your life, but the life of your future husband, your future wife, your future children.
You do realize that's the reality, though. For 80% of graduating dentists, the answer is yes. They are dictating it way their life goes because of that debt load.
Okay, so 50% of them should be doing it that because they're bread and butter, 150 to 200 grand dentists.
They're not listening to this. Yes.
Yeah, but that's what they want to be, okay? And I don't fault that. There are times where my wife and kids wished I was a normal dentist that went to work for 4 days a week, came home and was like super daddy.
But my big thing is what I want to like nail on is that like, okay, we talk about savings, talk about retirement, talk about that sort of thing, is because everyone wants to compare interest rate to interest rate. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that we get, 7% loans, 7% the market. It's not just a comparison of rates. Get off your phone.
I'm listening to you, dude. My workout trainer is asking me.
Your workout trainer. Aaron, did you text somebody your walk in the morning?
Hey, dude, get back to the point you want to hammer on.
So this is important, though, because what a lot of people look at is they want to look at interest rates to interest rate. But the problem is like – when we look at student loans are something that are inevitably ending. Does that make sense? Like
10 years, 20 years?
Right. There's an ending. There's an ending.
So kind of like a house mortgage. Okay?
Whereas our retirement is technically infinite. Yeah. It's inevitable. There's no continued growth. And so if you look at like the way compounding interest works, it's hyperbolic, right? Like it takes a while to get to compounds that make a significant interest. So the point is that I don't care if even your loan interest rate is at 10% and your market return is at 5%.
You got to put something
because
there.
If you're not saving
something,
right, you never, because ultimately one is going to end before it gets into crazy compounding numbers. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you don't start one, it never gets to crazy compound numbers. So you can never actually create wealth that's that's substantial other than just like you saving money under your mattress. Does that make sense?
I know what you mean.
And that's a huge issue that we battle is because like, and I can't tell you how that's a, well, why should I put $5,500 in my IRA?
What is the typical loan payment per month for some person coming out of school?
What,
what's your loan payment per month?
$1,500. I extended mine to 25 years.
I shortened it.
Yeah, that's a while.
So $1,500, how much debt did you come out of school with?
$300.
So, okay.
$300,000.
It's $1,500 a month.
Well, I...
$150.
Long story, but I...
What's your interest rate?
It's at 3%, because I got...
That's phenomenal.
2.85.
Oh, gosh, screw y'all. They're all getting pissed now.
But solely, should I have not paid mine off in 2 years then?
My point would be, why would you ever pay your student loans off?
When I first came out, it was...
Why would you ever pay your mortgage off?
6.25%, $300,000, it was $1,600.
No, seriously, because the point that I did...
So how many years was that for? 30?
Yes.
Okay.
If the money that you're growing is compounding at a higher rate multiple years after, then the other can never catch up to it. So I could care less if I have $10 million in debt if I have $50 million in the bank. Okay? So like it doesn't matter how much debt I have as long as the money I'm growing is accumulating at a faster rate, right?
So what would the total amount of interest be that you would pay on typical student loans if you extracted over the
30 years? Yeah. It'd be just like a house payment. So at the end of the day, so if you had a $300,000 mortgage, I think you're going to pay almost $750,000 for your house.
Which to me would say that's probably nothing in the grand scheme of you accumulating $1 million more on the last couple compounds that you would have missed out on had you paid off that 3 or 4 years earlier. Does that make sense?
He doesn't like that.
Sure.
Well, no, but
like that's a point too.
Well, John, you were also in a position to pay off your loans because of the decisions you made.
But John, that's a great point because some people are going to be. And I think that's important to understand. Like some people are going to be more risk averse than others. You know, some people don't.
But I don't think John's risk averse. I think John was just smart with his money.
But some people, whether they like debt or don't like debt, or it's not the exact same situation. My argument point is just like you is to shake up a mindset that like we have to just pay off our debt as soon as possible because what I see is so many classmates who they graduate and without even thinking they're just trying to pay down their debt as fast as they can, which I don't think is necessarily the right decision for everyone. So my point is that like, hey, there are other options out there. You need to evaluate what's happening.
The mindset, I believe.
John is raising hand.
Go ahead.
So I knew that with what I wanted to do, I wanted to buy a practice and multiple practices.
That your debt ratio would probably have a huge impact on that.
That would be a huge, huge thing. And whether you want to have your own practice or maybe have one, that's a huge determining factor in being able to get financing.
But what's the difference in having student debt and having other business debt and your debt to income ratio?
So it could impact your ability to buy
the first one
type of practice.
Okay.
So if you wanted to take a $500,000 loan out but had $300,000 in loans, the bank might say, no, we can only approve you for $300,000 in practice financing because you don't cash flow.
Okay. Well, and again, I don't think that this is like I'm saying that like that's the one way this should be done. I'm just saying that like the reality is that people need to understand that there's an importance to saving, putting something aside early, and that the years that if they don't start saving until they're here 35, 38, 39, that they're missing out on substantial.
You know what you need to do, Sully? You need to play my episode number 5, Practice in Personal Finance Savings, on your podcast. Just replay that episode on there.
Is it good?
Yeah, I think so. It talks about, you can pay, I don't care. You want to pay your debt off early, pay your debt off early, but not at the expense of savings.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah.
So you pay your retire. You pay. I call it the FU fund.
Well, and so here's another point, and this is why I think it's important too, is because I think that there's a mental mindset to it that at the end of the month, if you pay yourself first, okay, when you get to the end of the month and it's down to paying off your student loan versus going out to eat, you're going to pay off your student loan because you know that hurts, right? So you're going to you're going to suck in, do what you got to do, not struggle, and you're going to pay off the debt. But if you don't pay yourself first and you pay your student loan off first and you get to the end of the month and it's between saving for retirement or going out to eat and doing all the fun stuff,
you're going
to
do the fun stuff.
The majority of the people on this earth that aren't Indian are going to do the fun stuff.
Even many Indians.
So to me, forget the interest rates, forget the mindset. From that standpoint alone, it's important to save first because you aren't going to hurt.
But
it doesn't hurt unless you do that.
I believe in making savings a bill.
I think that's a good idea. I'm bad about that, right?
It's a mortgage for me.
I'm bad about gold.
So how about this? Pills. So like my mortgage comes out of my account every month automatically. Okay. So my monthly savings comes out of my account automatically, just like any mortgage. Okay. And that number has increased every year to accommodate my either rising income or my sustaining lifestyle. And so what I tell everybody at your age, you guys should be saving $500 a month. And then next year should be $1,000 a month.
Oh, I think, yeah.
And then the year after that, it should be $2,000 a month. And the year after that, it should be $3,000 a month.
What was the idea that we should save 10% of our income or 20%?
No, I don't believe in any of that. I believe in it should be how many of a number of years you're in practice, you should be saving that many $1,000 per month.
Per month?
Per month. So I'm 18 years in practice now. I should be saving $18,000 a month.
Yeah, well, 99.9% of your colleagues couldn't do that.
They could. They never started, so they can't do it. Okay, so for you to go to zero to 18,000 is insurmountable.
Yep.
Okay, but for you to go to 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10, so because honestly, what's the big difference between 15,000 and 16,000?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. Okay, what's the difference in 1,000 and 2,000?
And that's something, honestly, I can improve on.
Yeah. So my message in that is start year one, $500 a month. Then pay your student loans off. You got extra money, pay off your loans. I don't care. Year two, $1,000 per month. Extra money, pay off your loans. Year three, $2,000 a month.
There's another aspect. So because it goes back to like why you pay. So on certain types of retirement accounts, like non-taxable places where you put money, like Roth IRAs, right? There's a cap.
Most dentists don't qualify for Roth IRAs.
All dentists qualify for Roth IRAs if you do it backdoor.
Is this what you're trying to sell us?
No, point is that like the reality is like that's a cap, right? So like you can't catch up on that when you're 35. But you can catch up on that when you're 35 on your student loans.
Sure.
Makes sense? So like there's just...
But Bernie Sanders is going to make it free.
So the point is that like I think both of us agree is that the reality is like you got to set something away and start saving now.
But just make it $500. Then pay off your student loans. And so here's the other point of this, okay? And this is, okay, so...
John, what did you start saving? Did you delay your saving because of your student loans, or did you pay them off because it was excess income? Because there's a difference.
Yeah, I delayed savings.
For how many years, though? 2 years. Nothing wrong with that.
Totally agree.
If you delayed savings for 10 years, there's a problem with that.
Yep.
Because that's a doubling cycle at the end. That's what people don't understand. So let's say you have $3 million saved when you get to retirement, and you lost 10 years on the front end. That's $3 million you lost on the back end, because your $3 million is $6 million in that doubling cycle.
And you would have paid $100,000 more in debt, but who cares?
But you would have got $3 million.
That's my point.
And that's the compounding interest factor, right? So that's the thing. Now, let me get back to how I developed what I've developed, okay? Because there are people that want to understand it, correct? I didn't develop what I developed because my parents gave me money. They supported me in the sense that they were very supportive. They helped me get loans. They helped me get financing through the banks. They helped me do those things, okay? They didn't give me money, okay? I mean, they assisted me. I'm not going to lie, okay? But you know, they assisted me in $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, not like paid for everything, okay? But I got there when I started savings. When I had a savings plan about now 10 years ago, I finally started saving, and I started with $1,000 a month. And it was just comforting to save $1,000 a month. And then I got to $2,000 a month and didn't affect my lifestyle. Then I got to $3,000 a month, didn't affect my lifestyle. And because my bills kept going up every year, correct? So we have a tendency as human nature is to make more when we have to make more, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so I believe in my concept.
Well, that's huge.
My concept is
first.
The concept is I make my bills go up every year, even if life around me doesn't go up.
Because at the end of the day, when you get to the end of the month, your savings has already been paid.
That's already been paid.
Your credit card bill hasn't.
Right. So now I got to make money.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why I increase the amount every year. Whether I need to or don't need to, I increase the amount. So 30 years out of practice, my goal is to be saving $30,000 a month.
And the reality is people just need to they need to evaluate what they're doing.
Yeah. So how can people get in touch with you?
MillennialDentist.com. Check out the podcast.
Why did you just get Cheese Factor on that?
That was good.
Why don't you be Bob Barker and say, get your pets paid or spayed and neutered?
MillennialDentist.com. Check us out. Or Richard Sullivan. Tbone04@gmail.com.
What about, let me ask you this. How can they get a koozie that has the most backwards saying, the most lying saying I've ever heard in my life, which is that work smarter, not harder, which I believe in, but you don't live.
You hate on millennials so much, but then you want to hate on our slogan. Like, work, no, like that is work smarter.
Your slogan is correct, but you don't live your slogan.
That was what we were, that was my point that I wanted to talk about.
Let's talk about
okay,
it.
So, okay, last point. Okay, my whole point is work smarter, not harder. Like, what?
Coming with us?
Are we leaving?
Well, I was going to get an Uber.
It'll be 15 minutes before your Uber gets you.
He's already here.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's going to be an issue. Okay, well, good stuff.
Thank you, Sully.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.